This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
While the nationwide lockdown is having a devastating effect on our economy, it is nothing compared to the catastrophic human, social, and economic cost if the virus could spread amongst our people unchecked.
That's South African President Cyril Ramaphosa on a multi-billion dollar relief package in the wake of COVID-19. Details coming up. Also, Cameroon's President Paul Biya admits that his military massacred innocent people. And Zimbabwe reduces the mandatory quarantine period by half. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Cameroon's President Paul Biya has admitted that the military massacred innocent people, mainly women and children, during clashes with rebels in February. After an international outcry over the deaths, Biya on Tuesday ordered arrests of the troops responsible. Villagers and rights groups have welcomed the move towards justice, but say it does not likely signal end to impunity from the military. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
President Paul Biya acknowledged that soldiers killed 3 women and 10 children in a February massacre that they then tried to cover up by torching houses and blaming rebels. Biya's office Tuesday released a statement saying 3 troops were arrested for the killings in the northwestern village of Ngarbu. Several other troops were expected to face disciplinary hearings for the killings, which led at least 600 of the villagers to flee to the capital Yaoundé. A spokesman for the Ngarbu villagers in Yaoundé, Innocent Laban, welcomed Biya's admission that the military was responsible.
This declaration comes to confirm the fact that the Cameroonian military is so unprofessional, a military that is killing the people rather than protecting them. This comes to show us that human rights activists are doing a good job. I think the government should tender a serious apology to these human rights groups for soiling their dignity. And those unscrupulous fellows in the military should be given maximum sanctions.
Ngarbu villagers say that Cameroonian troops the night of February 14 raided their village and killed dozens of people. Rights groups and the United Nations condemned the attack, which they say left at least 21 people dead, 14 of them children. Officials initially denied that the military committed any atrocity, calling it propaganda from Anglophone rebels and supporters to discredit their troops. Authorities had said rebels attacked a military scouting mission in the village and that the counterattack accidentally caused fuel containers to burn nearby houses. Ilaria Alegrozi is a senior researcher for Central Africa with Human Rights Watch. She says Biya's punishing the military for the massacre marks a step in the right direction. But speaking via a messaging application from London, she says investigations are needed into other crimes committed during Cameroon's conflict.
It is a very good first step because there are other abuses and crimes that have been committed in the Anglophone regions and beyond by both the security forces and armed groups, and these crimes deserve the same level of attention and inquiry that we saw with the Ngarbu massacre. We also welcome President Biya's call for increased collaboration with human rights groups, and we wish this really represents a change in the way the government views human rights organizations.
Cameroon's Ministry of Defense says Biya's admitting the military's blame for the massacre and attempted cover-up shows abusers will always face justice. The ministry authorized Human Resource Director Colonel Joseph Ajang Sonny to speak on the issue.
The resilience of the Cameroonian defense and security forces is intact. There is no perfect army in the world. Cameroonian defense and security forces, if they commit deviant acts during operations, they are tried in military courts and they don't go unpunished.
It is not the first time Cameroon has admitted its troops committed atrocities in its fight against Anglophone rebels and Islamist militant group Boko Haram. Cameroon arrested 7 soldiers in 2018, suspected of executing 2 women and 2 children 2 years earlier while fighting Boko Haram. The arrest followed the circulation online of 2 videos that appeared to show Cameroonian troops carrying out the killings and ongoing pressure from rights groups for justice. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
In South Africa, President Cyril Ramaphosa has announced a multi-billion dollar package to provide relief to his country in the wake of its COVID-19 epidemic. The nation's economy has been at near standstill for almost a month since the government enforced a lockdown to try to slow the virus's spread. Medical scientists say the emergency measure has worked and has likely saved many thousands of lives, but it has also resulted in immense hardship. Darren Taylor has more from Johannesburg.
In his latest address to the nation, President Ramaphosa acknowledged his people's suffering and appealed to them to be even more resilient.
While the nationwide lockdown is having a devastating effect on our economy, it is nothing compared to the catastrophic human, social, and economic cost if the virus could spread amongst our people unchecked.
The country's infection and death rates are the highest in Africa, but are still relatively low compared with other parts of the world. Nevertheless, said Ramaphosa, South Africa cannot afford to let its guard down.
Medical scientists and our doctors inform us that we are still in the early stages of this pandemic. Without proven therapeutic medicines or a vaccine, we can expect this to continue as a problem for the foreseeable future.
He said his administration's priority remained an intensification of the interventions needed to prevent as many infections as possible and to save lives. But it also needed to implement steps to save livelihoods and prevent starvation.
The pandemic requires an economic response that is equal to the scale of the disruption it is causing. We are announcing a massive social and economic support package of 500 billion rand, which amounts to about 10% of our GDP.
Ramaphosa said some of the funding, equivalent to about $27 billion, would be raised through international lending institutions like the World Bank. He added that much of the money would be used to boost South Africa's medical response to COVID-19.
If we are to successfully manage the anticipated surge in cases and ensure that everyone who needs treatment receives it, we must provide for additional expenditure on personal protective equipment for health workers, community screening, an increase in testing capacity, additional beds in field hospitals, ventilators, medicine, and staffing.
Ramaphosa said 20 billion rand would go to municipalities for emergency water supplies, sanitation of public transport vehicles, and food and shelter for the homeless. More would be used to relieve social distress.
Poverty and food insecurity have deepened dramatically in the course of just a few weeks. To reach the most vulnerable families in our country, we have decided on a temporary 6-month coronavirus grant. We will direct 50 billion rand towards relieving the plight of those who are most desperately affected by the coronavirus.
Ramaphosa acknowledged that food distribution efforts have been inadequate and in some cases hijacked by unethical officials, and promised to use the law to curtail corruption. The president said the government had already provided funds to save almost 40,000 companies and the jobs of 600,000 workers. He said 100 billion rand would protect more firms and jobs and would pay the wages of workers whose employers were no longer able to. Billions would also be allocated to informal businesses and individuals such as athletes, artists and waste collectors to ensure they survived. Ramaphosa said a loan guarantee program would assist companies with costs such as salaries and rent.
It is expected that the scheme will support over 700,000 firms and more than 3 million employees through this difficult period.
Despite the measures, Ramaphosa said the COVID-19 crisis would result in many businesses closing and many people losing their jobs. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Zimbabwe's government has reduced the mandatory quarantine period for possible coronavirus cases by one half. The government says it lacks the resources to take care of patients in isolation for the two-week period recommended by the World Health Organization. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare for VOA News.
Health Minister Obadiah Moyo said late Tuesday that Zimbabwe does not have the resources to continue following the two-week quarantine period for people entering the country. Speaking at a news conference streamed on social media, Moyo said the cabinet has decided to reduce the quarantine period to 7 days.
And if they are found to be positive, they will be sent to an isolation centre. And if they are negative, they will be released, and it decongests the facilities.
That might be good news for returning Zimbabwean citizens who have been complaining on social media about squalid quarantine centers which reportedly do not have running water. Health experts see this as dangerous. Dr. Alex Kasasira, the head of the World Health Organization in Zimbabwe, is urging those released to self-quarantine to minimize the spread of COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. Zimbabwe has 29 confirmed cases. 4 people have died.
Several of the confirmed cases in Zimbabwe have been amongst people who are returning to Zimbabwe from countries which have widespread transmission of COVID-19. So it's really in the public health recommended good to have a close monitoring of anybody who is returning to Zimbabwe at this time from such countries. So this monitoring and the quarantine could be voluntary, it could be mandatory.
Zimbabwe had initially put the quarantine period at 21 days, even longer than the WHO's recommendation. Kasasira explains the importance of keeping possible coronavirus patients isolated while doctors watch them for signs of the infection.
The 14-day period is the average time between, it's what we call the incubation period, is the time between the time somebody may be infected and the time he or she develops symptoms. So if you spend more than 14 days without having any symptoms, the likelihood is that you are not likely to be infected.
The cash-strapped government says it has so far spent about $125,000 on food and basic needs of 950 returning residents in COVID-19 quarantine centers. The cost of accommodation is not included in that figure, officials said Wednesday. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
2 days after Ghana's government eased parts of its coronavirus lockdown, Ghanaians have expressed mixed reactions. VOA's House of Service reports that while some are praising the president's decision to lift the lockdown because it will ease hardships on them, others disagree with the measure, saying it was designed to allow the Electoral Commission to compile the voting register while the country is still battling with COVID-19. Authorities also ordered police personnel who helped enforce the lockdown to undergo a mandatory COVID-19 test. Neighboring Burkina Faso joined Ghana in being the first African nation to ease coronavirus restrictions. In the capital, Ouagadougou, markets have been closed since March 25th. On Monday, the government reopened one as a test so it could safely open the others by the end of the month. You are listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. Here is a recap of our top stories. Cameroon's President Paul Biya admits his military massacred innocent people. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa has announced a multi-billion dollar relief package in the wake of its COVID-19 epidemic. And Zimbabwe reduces its mandatory quarantine period by half. And for more news and information, visit our website at voanews.com. South Africa, Malawi, and Zimbabwe have begun to arrest people for peddling COVID-19-related falsehoods. Eddie Gando gives us more on the story.
Zimbabwean police on Monday made their first arrest under lockdown regulations aimed at fighting the coronavirus pandemic. Love Mozo Kusekwa, 36, appeared in court in Harare on charges of publishing or communicating false statements prejudicial to the state. Zokusekwa allegedly authored a fake statement bearing President Mnangagwa's signature announcing the original 21-day lockdown was being extended. It circulated on social media. Mnangagwa had ordered an investigation into the document's origin. Spreading fake news on social media and mainstream media about COVID-19 is punishable by up to 20 years in prison. Constitutional law expert Love Momaduku speaks on the law.
That provision has always been there. What they did, the COVID-19 regulations, lockdown regulations, they simply notified the public of the existence of that, of we are invoking it. So they didn't create a new offense, which applies only during COVID-19.
Zimbabwe joins South Africa and Malawi in making such arrests, which have led media organizations to reflect on the possible implications for their professions. Tabani Moyo, the executive director of the Media Institute of Southern Africa in Zimbabwe, speaks.
It started in South Africa. It started with South Africa and everything that happens in South Africa. You know, we are now in a catch-based mode in Zimbabwe. It started with South Africa. Then Eswatini, formerly Swaziland, adopted. Zimbabwe adopted. Zambia is on the process of adopting. So it is a top-down approach in terms of understanding COVID.
Since the matter is before the courts, Moyo said his organization has not issued an official statement on the matter yet.
We want to make a comprehensive approach to it so that we do not leave loopholes. Our legal team is detailed as we speak.
The deputy president of the Zambia Institute of Independent Media Alliance, Jubio Zulu, says it's not always easy for the public to distinguish between a professional journalist and ordinary citizens on social media.
The new media has posed a lot of misconception on the journalist. At the end of the day, you find that people, when they want to judge a journalist, they will go further to say this is what they post, without understanding that on social media there's a lot of things that do happen, and there's a lot of people that are found on social media and they are all not journalists. So we must understand what the difference is between a media personnel and those that are found on social media. That embraces everyone and anyone can post anything.
Observers say governments could use the rules to suspend civil liberties and crush dissenting voices. They cite the recent cancellation of Zambian independent television station Prime Television's license for allegedly refusing to air government-produced COVID-19 promos. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo.
Senegal has more than 200 reported cases of coronavirus, prompting President Macky Sall to declare a state of emergency last week. Among those most vulnerable to the virus are the street children of the capital who live in crowded boarding homes and are forced to beg for a living. As Estelle Ngando reports from Dakar, those trying to guard the children say that if an outbreak begins, there is not much they can do.
Jules Suleiman Ndiaye distributes milk to street children near Astelibé in the city of Bour, south of Dakar. The children are told to line up single file with a distance of 1 meter between each person. Son of Talibé himself, Ndiaye is co-founder of Pour une Enfant Sénégal, for a childhood in Senegal. The Franco-Senegalese Association was created in 2012 to help street children who are estimated to number at least 100,000. Ndiaye says the Talibés, who beg for a living, are among the most vulnerable to catching and spreading the coronavirus. Most live in daras, boarding homes run by Islamic scholars that are notorious for unsanitary, crowded conditions. Suleiman says they tell the children they must not shake hands with people, and when they come in from outside, they must clean up. He says some of the kids have even made a homemade sink to wash their hands. In 2016, Senegalese authorities introduced a law that officially prohibits children from begging in an effort to get the Talibé off the streets. But the law has never been enforced. The National Food Security Council of Senegal says it plans to provide for underprivileged families to help get them through the coronavirus pandemic. Nurobaye Diouf is a director of a child protection committee with Senegal's Ministry of Family. He says Senegalese authorities have a coronavirus emergency plan for street children. The city of Dakar has made 13 educational social centers available, says Diouf, as well as other community centers. They are talking about a capacity of 1,500 beds, he says. Keeping the Talibés off the streets to avoid coronavirus is key, says nurse of For Childhood Senegal, Amara Thiam. Thiam says if a Talibé child is contaminated, it will be a disaster because their dara, maybe all daras, will be contaminated. When they go out on the streets, he says, they interact a lot with each other. Before the pandemic, he ran the center's clinic, which gave basic medical care to about 30 street children per day. For a Childhood in Senegal also ran a center that offered classrooms, playrooms, shower, a bakery, and a vegetable garden, making it a haven for Talibés. But now the center, like much of Dakar, is closed to prevent spreading the virus. Co-founder Jai says a stay-at-home lockdown may be the only thing that spares the kids from catching the virus and passing it to others. Estelle Jonjo for VOA News, Dakar.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. And on behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, I'm Yehye Suhib in Washington, thanking you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.